I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. There are two kinds of people rallying against the government in Iran these days. The first are the students who have taken to the streets. Once again, they've been clashing with pro-government vigilantes, and once again, it seems like the authorities have the upper hand. The second group of people is living outside the country. They are Iranian exiles, many based in Los Angeles, who are using satellite radio and television broadcasts to fire up the protesters and call for regime change. Western leaders like George Bush and Tony Blair are also speaking out, encouraging the voices of dissent. Now, Connection listeners, we know that the hardliners in Iran love to dismiss the protesters as stooges of the West. So, when the world leaders and the expatriates start getting involved, do they actually help the cause of change in Iran, or do they end up strengthening the hand of the clerics and the conservatives? Are Iranian exiles acting irresponsibly when they encourage the dissidents, or do the protesters need all the help they can get? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And today we'll be talking with people in the United States who are working to bring regime change to Iran, but we're going to start with Jim Muir. He's the BBC correspondent, and he's based in Tehran. Hello, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well. Good to hear you. I'm interested in getting a little bit caught up here, because after several weeks of pretty steady news of the protests in Iran, we haven't been hearing that much lately. Have the protests themselves fallen off?
Yes, the stuff that started in mid-June lasted roughly 10 days, or I should say 10 nights, because it was going on essentially at night time. It consisted, after an initial few nights when it was focused on the university dormitory in the center of town, it then spread to various parts of Tehran, where people would simply take their cars, end up in a traffic jam, hooting defiantly, having their windscreens smashed by right-wing vigilantes and so on. I should say also, it's not just Tehran. We're talking about a lot of other cities. In fact, practically every other major city in the country was also affected by this. And we were quite surprised later on to be told by the authorities that at least 4,000 people were arrested around the country, of whom they say something like 2,000 are still in custody.
Do we know if anybody was killed in these protests?
Well, we hear rumors, but when you check them out, they kind of dissolve. So I would say that unless proven otherwise, no is the answer. Although I know of one woman, for example, who was stabbed very badly and very nearly died in hospital, but in fact recovered. Her situation was the focus of some of the rumors, because when you see somebody taken away, covered in blood and gasping for life, a lot of people assumed that she died when in fact she hadn't. So that's the kind of thing I think that does give rise to rumors of that sort.
Now, there was a hope among the dissidents that they would build some momentum in the protests leading up to tomorrow, July 9th, the anniversary of the riot involving Tehran University students. But if, in fact, over the course of the protests in June, some 4,000 people were arrested, is that what put an end to that effort? Was the government simply, or the government vigilantes cracking down, was that just simply too much for the people who were trying to protest?
It's really hard to say, because things are focused on tomorrow. It could well be that we'll see another spurt that will set off another round of this kind of continuing saga that's been going on for some years now. But it's really hard to say whether those arrests and the crackdown, and I've seen women who've had their skulls practically broken open by the riot police, who were not using velvet gloves, they were using heavy clubs. It's hard to say whether that has had a deterrent effect or whether it has in fact emboldened some people. Because, for example, the woman I'm referring to is absolutely determined. She will go out there and she will fight tomorrow night. So, as I say, we'll have to suck it and see, as they say, because, we just can't tell at the moment whether people have been cowed or whether fresh grievances have been added to fuel the flames. And indeed, there are grievances that have come up since. A number of student leaders, for example, were arrested after the demonstrations. They had no part in the demonstrations. The accusation is that the authorities are using it as a kind of excuse to crack down on the student movement as a whole. And there are many other grievances as well that have happened as a result of the suppression of the latest protests.
Jim, I wonder if you can just stay with us for a couple of minutes, because I want to turn to the activity of exiles and then come back to you with a sense from you of how that's being absorbed in Iran, in Tehran. But before we do that, let's just find out what's been going on, because there are these dozen or so satellite radio and television stations, mainly in Southern California, that have recently been putting their broadcasts up on the satellites and hoping that they're seen in Iran. Certainly a lot of that is getting through. For example, on one, the National Iranian Television Network, there is a link to videos showing interrogations done on prisoners inside Iran. These are extracts from hundreds of hours from the video filmed by the interrogators, and some of this is available on television stations like that. This, for example, is a bit of what people are seeing. This is a grainy black and white video of someone being questioned and slapped at the same time. We're joined on the line now from North Hollywood, California, by Zia Atabai. He is founder of the National Iranian Television Network. And I gather, Zia, that you've been doing so much work broadcasting in the evening, you're not getting a lot of sleep during the day.
Yeah, especially that from the last 24 hours, all our signal been jammed. And what surprised me, on Thursday 12 up to now, Iranian government cannot jam it from Iran. And we can, but they started now, and we know it is from America, but not North. It's from North America, and we're trying to get the help from the government to or Laurel, Telestar 12. But we find out we cannot find out who's doing this. And now that I'm talking to you, all the radios and televisions that going from out of country and especially from United States is jammed by the, I'm sure by them. Iran government.
Zia, when you are on the air, what is the message you're trying to get to the people in Tehran, in Iran?
The really is that most of the things that we're doing, their messages we're taking and just give it back to the others. And we use, they use us for talking to each other. But what happened in here, for example, in NITV, a National Iranian Television, that I'm responsible for, it is... we are fighting for freedom and democracy, and we believe if Iranian government change, it's not only on benefit of Iranian people, it will be benefit of the world, especially America.
Zia, are you saying that you're giving the news reports to people that they cannot get in Iran, or are you actually, you know, saying to them, look, get up out of your homes, go onto the streets, join the protesters?
All right, two things with together. Let me tell you something. What happened here? First of all, you know it. There is no news, free news in Iran in Farsi.
Right.
There's no radio. There's no television that it talks about freely about the people. And all the writers, they are in jail. There's no newspaper. So what happened here? Our news that is most important and stronger news and professional that in Iranian media is going in Iran, and everybody watch it, even the government's people. But when something happened in Iran, we asking the people, we telling to the people, first of all, we open all the minded and what happened in outside and what happened in other countries without blood, without taking gun in your hand. And this is your country and you have to take over. Yes, we say it.
So it is a mix of news and commentary. Zia, I'd like you to just hang on for a minute because I do want to go back to Jim Muir. Jim can't be with us for much longer in the program, but Jim, what do you know about how these radio and satellite television signals are being taken in by the protesters in Iran? Are a lot of people watching this stuff?
Well, you have to realize this is a country where satellite dishes are, in fact, banned. Now, that doesn't mean to say a lot of people don't have them. Quite a number, especially obviously of middle class and better off people, have them hidden away on their roofs and disguised so that they can't be reported by nosy neighbors, etc. So there is a certain impact from these TV stations. There are a certain number of people who respond when they call, as NITV and others do, for people to go to a certain location and protest against the regime. But I would say that it's not, frankly, more than about a few thousand who would actually turn out at the call of those stations at the moment. What's happening in the protests in mid-June was that people had the bit between the teeth. They wanted to get out there. They would listen in to these stations or tune into the stations to find out where things might be happening and then rush off there. But the bulk of these people are basically going out to see what's happening, not to actually do anything. And that's one of the problems about seeing this as a potential for regime change. That's not the way it is. And I have to say also that a lot of these protesters going out there don't see these TV and radio stations, and they don't also like the idea of America being behind them, American officials encouraging these protests. They want to sort things out for themselves. They don't want an Iraq-type situation where the Americans prepare the way to wade in, get rid of the regime, when there's a vacuum of leadership because there is no credible alternative to the regime. And that is one of the very major problems. There is no alternative leadership that has any real support here waiting in the wings.
And we'll be talking later in this hour about how people are absorbing reports from Tony Blair and from George Bush that they, too, are speaking out on behalf of or in support of the protesters. Are those words making it to the street level?
Certainly they're getting reflected in the papers, and I take issue with your speaker from NITV. The papers here are very lively, and there's actually more reformist papers than there are hardline ones, so there's a lot of debate going on here. Tony Blair's remarks were not taken, certainly by the regime, as being terribly helpful. I would say, again, that most people are not looking realistically to outside for change. They want some pressure to be applied from outside. They want Europe, for example, to use the carrot to say to Iran, you can have trade agreements if you do this and that. They want the IAEA, who's Mr. Baradei, will be coming here tomorrow to say, if you sign up to this additional protocol and allow absolutely unlimited inspections, you may then get access to the peaceful nuclear technology you want. They want to be part of the world, but they want that to be a peaceful transition. They don't want to see more revolutions and more wars. They want a better life, and they know that that kind of upheaval simply takes them back a decade or two.
Jim, just one last question. It's such a difficult country to report on, or has been for the past 20-odd years. I'm a little bit lost right now as to how easy it is for you to do your job when you are hearing that there are reports of protests in distant cities. Can you trust those? Are you free to go out on the streets of Tehran and interview the protesters? Is it difficult just for you to get the story back to us, even from where you are based in the capital?
It's difficult to get access to things while they're happening. For example, towards the tail end of the recent protests, the moment I stepped into one of the squares where there was a kind of tension going on, nothing very dramatic, just tension, I was picked up and held very politely, very courteously for 4 or 5 hours by security forces, by intelligence people. It is very, very difficult. They have not been giving visas for foreign correspondents who want to visit here during this period. Right. They have pulled the credentials of some who are already here. The real difficulty is actually with television. For radio and reporting, you can actually go there and you might get chased away, or one or two were actually beaten up during the recent trouble. But for TV, the real problem is getting good pictures, because anybody who pulls a camera out, it sticks out like a sore thumb and gets cracked down on. It's a very major problem.
Jim, thanks so much again for your help on this. That's Jim Muir, BBC correspondent based in Tehran. Connection listeners, we're talking about the pro-democracy movement in that country. What is the responsibility of world leaders and Iranian exiles in supporting the protesters? Should they monitor what they say? Should they stay quiet? Or do the protesters need that support? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we'll be taking your calls, going back to Zia Atabai, and also listening to one of the voices of the human rights side here in America when we come back after the break. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
I appreciate those courageous souls who speak out for freedom in Iran. They need to know America stands squarely by their side. And I would urge the Iranian administration to treat them with the utmost of respect.
That was President George Bush speaking last month in support of the protesters on the streets in Tehran. We're talking about the future of the pro-democracy movement there and what effect the voices from outside the country have, whether or not it's all positive or whether or not there are any reservations about the type of support that they're getting. We have with us on the program Zia Atabai. He's founder of National Iranian Television, a 24-hour Persian television station based in North Hollywood, California. We're joined now by Ladan Buraman. She is director director of the Bourhamane Foundation for the Promotion of Human Rights and Democracy in Iran. She's also a visiting fellow at the International Forum for Democratic Studies in Washington, D.C. She's joining us from the NPR studios there. Ladan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
I'm interested just to hear from you your thoughts about what difference it makes when you get someone like President George Bush or Prime Minister Tony Blair speaking out, as they both did last month, in support of the protesters.
Here I have to take issue with Jim Muir. I think the effect of these statement by the American president and the British prime minister were very positive, because usually totalitarian state try to isolate their people and make them believe that they are isolated, that no one in the whole world care about their freedom, so they have to deal with their government alone. When the president of one of the biggest and most powerful democracies in the world comes out in support of pro-democracy movement and acknowledge that the regime is not representative of its people, it gives a tremendous psychological and ideological boost to pro-democracy movement.
And Zia, were you hearing that same response from the callers to your phone-in show on National Iranian Television?
Yes. The only things that the BBC reporter was saying, this is very important. You have to understand it. European, what happens in here is sad for Iranian people inside Iran, is that everybody wants to have a negotiation about the money, contracts, and, okay, now this stays about the chemical weapon or atomic weapon that they are building there. But they don't talk about, okay, what kind of a government is this? How is the people going to do? And nobody asks this government, okay, everything is okay if it's only a bunch of people. Why you don't do the election, free election, and choose that they want you or not? This is the main problem of Iranian with the European. And European, I believe, bottom part, they don't want American to go back to that, to Iran, because they made a lot of money. They have a lot of good contract with the Iranian government. And really, they don't, it looks like that they don't care that what's the relationship Iranian government with their people. But the world is now is waking up. And such as work that a lot and others, people in the world, they care, will affect. And like your station, for the first time you're talking to each other, and I'm sure that your listener and all the American, they're standing and they're going to understand, is about the politics. There is a human things that's going to happen. And I see it something that maybe the other people, they don't think about it, especially American. What happening here, if this regime stays in there because doesn't believe on peace, doesn't believe on human rights, doesn't believe of free of religion.
All right, but here's the point that I'm having trouble understanding, and Ladan, maybe you can help me with this. That is that when the regime in Iran hears Bush and Blair speaking out, they are able to say, you see, the protests are not homegrown protests. They're not Iranians who want change. This is all being brought from outside. It's all being fomented by people in Washington and London. So when you get Bush and Blair speaking out, isn't there a risk that as much as it may strengthen the protesters, it also strengthens the conservatives?
Yes, that is precisely what the regime wants you to believe and go against, you know, what is happening right now. But the truth is that from the early days of the Islamic Republic, whoever spoke of freedom, democracy, and human rights was immediately labeled as an American, as an American stooge. And how many people have been executed since the early days of the revolution as American spies or, you know, agent of international Zionism? You know, I'm doing a work on the history of human rights violations by the Islamic Republic, and this is not a new problem due due to the statement by President Bush or Tony Blair. So it doesn't make any difference, because these kids, when they in 1999 were in the streets, when nobody took their side, they were also called agents of American imperialism.
Okay, but let's go back, if we can, to one other example that sticks in my mind, and this is after the Persian Gulf War, when the President George Bush Sr. at that time said to Iraqis, he said, go rise up against your government. And those people, many of them were killed because they believed that America was going to stand behind them. And I'm wondering, what's the risk in Iran when you get the Western leaders saying, go to the streets and support the protest? Is there a risk that people will put their lives?
If I may, that's a problem. In one of my show last week, I mentioned to President Bush, and I said that when you're talking about a support, only problem will you create if you don't support. And really, you meaning your support is morally just you talk, will be happen exactly what you say that happened in Iraq. But what happens in here, we have to understand it. It happened before with Al-Qaeda, we call it Al-Qaeda. These people that was working in some time for Russia, against Russia, we let them go, and sometime they came back to us. Iranian government has a hand not only in these things. You know it, that they have a terrorist act in Argentina. They have it in Hezbollah in Lebanon. And still, with 16,000 people, they had...
Hang on a second, Zia. I mean, it's one thing to draw those links between terrorist organizations and the government in Iran, but the question still remains, what is the United States offering alongside its support? Is it putting people in harm's way by simply saying, rise up against your government?
I think that you saying that they put it in harm. We are now out of Iran. They cut our voice. But you will see it tomorrow. And we know a lot.
What will I see tomorrow?
You will see tomorrow the people without the radio, without television, without the American president, they go to the street.
The protests will resume tomorrow, you're saying?
Will be. But if all the nations, they don't push the government will start day after tomorrow for a massacre. We have information inside Iran that even they don't trust their army, they will start to beat, to kill. And I was wondering why one of the BBC's reporter says, I didn't hear anyone get killed. How many people you want to have I prove that there was killed? And they killing the young people, torturing and put them in the freeway, and they roll over the freeway, these people that they find out, they think that is an accident. Their mother was on air. We have a report on them, and we have the film for 6 minutes that even one young man that was changing his religion, it was killed and tortured.
Zia, just one last quick question. Do you think you'll be able to get your broadcast back up and running in time for tomorrow?
I don't think so. That's here what I want to know. And I want you, as American broadcaster, if you could, you find out. Up to now, last 24 hours, all of us, we're trying to find out why and how.
And
who is going to jam our signal? Not President Bush is helping us.
Right.
Not because don't forget it. This is broadcast. I am an American broadcaster. I'm
here,
not Iranian. But nobody in here help us. And even the Telestar 12 and the Laurel satellite company even doesn't tell us from where they're jamming. And it started from the bottom of the heart of Iranian. They're thinking, is it true that British, on behalf of America, they went with the mullahs and they talk, and now it's happening from America? I don't believe it.
All right, Zia, we're going to be watching along with you tomorrow. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Zia Atabai is founder of National Iranian Television. That's a station, as he mentioned, based in North Hollywood, California, broadcasting 24 hours a day in Farsi, entertainment, talk shows, lots of politics, and it's one of a number of stations where they're exiles or trying to get information to people in Iran about what's going on outside the country and also encouraging them to take part in the protest. Now, Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. What kind of position should the United States be taking at an official level in terms of either providing support for or just staying quiet about the type of protests that are going on in Iran? There is even dissent among the senior levels of the government, and we'll talk about that. And what restrictions, if any, should exist for the exiles in terms of having them use the technology to, say, get out on the streets and protest. I'm going to go back now to Ladan Buramond, who works with the foundation by the same name. She's joining us from Washington, D.C. And back to a question that that we were on a couple of minutes ago, Ladan, and that is whether or not there's not some kind of risk that Western leaders telling people to go to the street are going to raise unrealistic expectations of the kind of support that actually exists in the West.
I think you're right when you mentioned the example of President Bush, the father, and the tragic Iraqi situation. But there are nuances between calling a nation's a foreign president calling another nation's to rise against its government, and a president acknowledging the existence and the legitimacy of an existing movement within Iran. And this is an very, very important distinction that must be made. It's exactly the same as saying that the United States sends its troops to Iran to help pro-democracy movement. That would become much more problematic, a military invasion of Iran, than supporting and acknowledging the legitimacy of the Iranian demands of for democracy and respect for human rights. And I wanted to cite, you know, quote the very recent open letter signed by the Student Association of 29 universities that was sent to Kofi Annan, the General Secretary of the United Nations, yesterday. And it's a very moving and interesting letter because it is an open call for the world to come out and support in solidarity the pro-democracy movement. And it is also a complaint against the Iranian regime that is not listening to its people. When no one listens to you, you have to talk, you know, call to witness foreign nations. And when the Iranian people, you know, Iran, President Bush is extremely, extremely popular in Iran. And this is very ironic because many French reporters who went to Iran during in the previous spring, they noted how popular and was President Bush, and they were outraged because Bush is so unpopular in Europe. And the reason is that this is the first time that the representative of an important democracy acknowledged the dignity of the Iranian people. It is, you know, dignity is an extremely important matter. And for 25 years, the Iranians have been identified in the eyes of the West with a terrorist and criminal regime. And for the first time, because of, as a consequence of 9/11's tragedy, Western statesmen, some of them at least, are becoming aware of the importance of pro-democracy movement within the countries who are ruled by, you know, tyrannies.
Ladan, I just want to stop you there for a moment. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. So we can get to Shrewsbury, Massachusetts now, and Mushkun is joining us. Hello, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Just a couple of quick comments. In my opinion, I feel that Iranian broadcasters, what they can do, rather than trying to have people come out and protest and, you know, put their lives in line, is to inform people. We are sitting here in the United States having a good life, and we're trying to tell them to go on the street and, you know, get arrested or even lose their lives. First of all, I don't think that's right. I think we should just give people information in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all,
Mushkan, what is it? What is it that they're lacking? Because Jim Muir was saying from the BBC that there is a fairly lively newspaper trade in that country, but are they still lacking a lot of information about what's going on inside their own country?
I believe so. As a matter of fact, when I was talking to Iran with my father, I was telling him what is going on, what the protests are. He was getting information from me.
Your father's in Iran, I'm sorry.
Yes. So they do definitely lack information. That's what they need, to know what's out there in the world, because they're pretty isolated as far as, you know, the information goes. The other thing I wanted to, I'll be very quick, as far as the United States is concerned, there's actually a resolution in House, I think it's Resolution 29, which calls for regime change in Iran. I don't know who's sponsoring that, but in my opinion, I don't think the United States has anything, should have anything to do with regime change. That's something that people have to do. We had United States backing when Shah was in, and Shah wasn't a, you know, democratic, you know.
Mushkan, can I ask you a question? Do you think that it was a bad move for the president to speak out in the manner that he did, though?
President Bush?
Yes.
About the regime change?
Yeah, I had his comments here a couple of minutes ago. He said, in effect, that I appreciate those courageous souls who speak out for freedom in Iran. They need to know Americans stand squarely by their side.
I'm a little skeptical about President Bush's comments. As I said, we had United States backing back in the 70s, and Shah was 100% with the United States. That didn't really mean it was a democracy for people of Iran. That I think, has to come from people within. I can't be sitting here telling people go on the streets. I don't think that's for me to decide. I could support them by providing them information. That's the only thing I can do, but not trying to tell them to go out there and put their lives online.
Mushkan, thank you so much for calling the program today.
Thank you.
And Connection listeners, when we come back after our brief break, a reminder, our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. More from you and more from Ladan Buramand on whether or not the pro-democracy movement in Iran needs to come from within that country, as Mushkan is saying, or whether or not it needs that measure of outside support, either from leaders or from exiles, even people providing money to the exiles to give them the information. After all, if we look back to 1988 and 1989, it was that type of broadcasting precisely which helped bring around the situation that involved the falling of the Berlin Wall. So there's certainly lots of precedent to say that this type of media can have its effect. We'd like to hear from you. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest on the program today is Ladan Buramand. She is director of the Buramand Foundation for the Promotion of Human Rights and Democracy in Iran. She is visiting fellow at the International Forum for Democratic Studies. That's part of the National Endowment for Democracy in Washington, a center analyzing the democratic movements worldwide. And Connection listeners, we're talking this hour about what responsibility world leaders and Westerners and exiles have as people inside Iran once again try to wrestle with their own pro-democracy movement. Ladan, the one thing I haven't had a chance to hear from you on is precisely that, the exiles themselves, the responsibility, as Mushkan was putting it, of the television, the expatriate television networks and the radio networks to, you know, either encourage the protesters or to just give news. What, you've been involved in this now for a long, long time. What do you think is the best thing for those networks to do?
I think the previous caller, Mushkan, was right in a sense that it's difficult for us as exiles to sit in the United States or in Europe and call on people to go to the streets. And believe me, I don't think the Iranian population is naive enough just to follow our commands. When they come, you know, they come in the streets and demonstrate, it's because they have no other choice. The government leaves them no other choice. There is no possibility for them to negotiate whatsoever in order to get some freedom, to have some economic, you know, advantages. Mm-hmm. Their situation is extremely difficult. One of the peculiarities of the Islamic Republic is that it has confiscated the future from the horizon of the Iranians' lives. So a young who lives in Iran has no future. The only thing they try to do is to make a living and survive. And that is an extraordinary odd situation that creates the sense of revolt and rebellion constantly. So it is not so much the exiles that are at the root of this call for uprising. It is a sort of structural discontent that finds its way out every now and then in different ways.
But are you saying that there is perhaps a greater responsibility on the exiles to stick to news rather than sort of cheerleading from the side then?
Well, you know, there is another phenomenon that we didn't talk about it at all, and this is the internet. The internet has recreated a unity among the exiles and the active opposition inside Iran. In the old time, we had to rely on the news from the correspondents, foreign correspondents in Iran, to know exactly what was going on. And they themselves were limited. First of all, most of them don't speak Farsi. Then they are strictly controlled by the regime. There are red lines that they cannot, you know, defy in pain of, you know, being their visa refused and being thrown out of the country. And Genevieve Abdo, who was the correspondent for The Guardians, had an interview with one of the Iranian dissidents, Akbar Ganji, and as a result, she was thrown out of the country. But today, in a matter of 10 minutes, for instance, on the website, we get all the communiques of different students' associations from around Iran, and that's how we get our information. And
I thought the Iranians were getting pretty good at shutting down some of those portals the same way the Chinese do it.
That's true, but still the information is, we have no problem getting the information. For instance, Jim Muir didn't know that at least officially one person was killed during the June demonstration in Shiraz, and we had a lot of information about he's being killed and the ceremonies that were held in Shiraz.
The funeral.
Commemorating him.
Let's go back to our telephone lines. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Weston, Massachusetts now. And Morgan's joining us. Hi, Morgan.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. I wanted to make a point that, especially this ties back to the show you did a few days ago on Charles Taylor and how he should and whatnot.
Right.
And I think this all ties into a seeming new foreign policy that this administration is beginning, in that it wants to be sort of the savior angels of democracy and bring democracy to the world, which is not necessarily a bad thing, although it does harken back a bit to the days of colonialism. But it would seem to me that
There's a price to this, though, Morgan. I mean, once President Bush spoke out and said Charles Taylor should step down as leader of Liberia, then there was a lot of pressure and continues to be a lot of pressure on the United States to send peacekeepers to that country. And I'm wondering whether or not, you know, if the president chooses to speak out on Iran and say, let's back up the protesters there, whether or not he doesn't raise expectations that there'll be soldiers going to that country. I mean, not as if they could go there. They can't. But, you know, is that, I guess, the concern that you have?
Yes, that is absolutely a concern that I have. I'm concerned that is this administration's plan, that we just start sending troops in to, quote-unquote, liberate all these countries that have governments we don't agree with and or oppress their citizens. And I don't think that it is a decision to become this kind of nation. it may be a good decision for us. It may be good for the world, although not all of people are going to see it that way. But I think it's not a decision this administration should get to just make unilaterally on its own.
Okay, but let's look at it from the other side here. If maybe it's this particular administration, which has already intervened in a couple of countries, Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as other places where soldiers went in the war on terror, has raised that expectations. But do you want to let go of the American reputation in the world for being something of a conscience of democracy and speaking out and saying, no, you shouldn't treat the Burmese leader this way, and no, you shouldn't, you know, behave this way in any other country?
Well, ideally, I want to say no. I think it's great that we do that and that we say these things, even though sometimes we don't back it up. But I think we need what's happening now is that people are going to expect us to back it up,
right?
Because of what we've done in you know, Bosnia, Iraq, Afghanistan. People are going to think that if we start spouting all this, you know, democratic rhetoric, that we are going to be there to back it up. And that's a danger for people in say Iran, as it was in Iraq when all the people rose up against Saddam and were slaughtered. Now, I think this is a decision that needs a popular vote. Do we want to become this country? Do we want to change our foreign policy so that we are now the democracy builders of the world, the liberators? Do we want to do that? I think it may be a good thing, and maybe not, but I think it's definitely something the American people need to vote on.
Which way would you vote?
I'm up in the air. I see these horrible dictatorships, the Taliban in Afghanistan. I mean, these are not good people, and they're doing bad things to their citizens, and they need to be stopped. Unfortunately, then we are seen as the aggressors of the world. It further enforces this opinion the world has of us as being arrogant Americans, thinking our way is the only way, we're always right, and we need to force it on other people.
Morgan, I want to thank you very much for your call and take your point and hear from Ladan Buramond on this, because Ladan, can the United States have it both ways? Be that sort of moral conscience when it comes to the suffering of people without necessarily making that a condition of sending soldiers in?
I think it depends on each country's. For instance, the situation of Afghanistan was different, distinct from the situation in Iraq, which is also very much different from what is going on in Iran. In Iraq, everything was closed. There were no debate, the population was kept in dark. People did not even have cell phones there. So the challenge was much more difficult I don't know how they could try. They had tried to change things, avoiding military intervention, and they did not succeed. In Iran, the situation is really different. For the political maturity and the development of a political culture is obvious there. The regime is very weak from within. For instance, one thing we don't know, there is among the coalition that is asking for a referendum on the regime and has invited people to join the 9th of July's demonstration. By the way, I would like to open a parenthesis here. The 9th of July demonstration was not called by the Iranian exiles. It was called by the Iranian Student Association or other political formation within Iran. What the exiles are doing is to support these days. So when they call for this, the coalition that calls for a referendum to be held on the very existence of an Islamic regime, among the members of this coalition, you have a little group whose members are recruited from the Basiji, who are precisely the vigilantes, and from the Hezbollah. So up on the very high level of this regime, there are people who are organizing for a transition and a change of regime. And another point that
I want to stop you there if I can, Ladan, because I want to see if we can squeak one more call in from Baltimore, Maryland. Mayar is joining us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Basically, I just wanted to make a comment in regards to the government in Iran right now. Just like back in 1979 when the Shah was there, It's pretty obvious that without violence, nothing is going to change over there. By that, I mean just talk is not going to resolve anything. either is American or European intervention or people of Iran rising. Maybe it's easy for me to say who's somebody sitting in the United States and talking, but it's obvious that it's not going to change. They have the military power. They control everything. And without bloodshed, nothing is going to change.
But should that come from within, or should that come with the assistance of people from outside, man?
I think it should come from within. What the assistant, I think, is vital for it to happen, because without the assistant, people don't have the capability of doing this.
And are you talking about moral support, or are you talking about military support?
Both. I think both. And the way I see it is, there's going to be bloodshed no matter what if the government is going to change.
Because we did have Secretary of State Colin Powell making the point about a week or so ago that, you know, he wasn't too crazy about this idea of Western leaders speaking up at all, that by most measures, President Khatami was democratically elected in Iran. And that would make it pretty creepy to send, you know, to have Westerners coming in with guns saying, we just don't like what you're doing here.
Well, he was, but the problem is he doesn't control anything. He's like a puppet that's standing up there, and the parliament and the supreme leader, Khamenei, is controlling everything. Mm-hmm. Every time he says anything, they shut him up one way or another.
Well, there's no question about that. The students are expressing that same frustration with the president. Ladan, we're coming to the end of the program here. I wonder how you see things changing in Iran. We will be watching to see what the nature of the protest is tomorrow, but you'll be looking weeks and months beyond that. What do you see happening?
Well, it seems to me that a change of regime is irreversible, and many of the partisans
Sorry,
of the
inevitable,
regime.
Do you mean?
Yes.
And with bloodshed, the way that Maillard described
it? Well, this is remain to be seen. It depends on the intelligence of those who are in power right now. And I think many from within are trying to organize a transition to another regime. There is a high level of frustration and rage among the population. It's the population that has been severely and violently repressed for 25 years. Mm-hmm. But also there is a maturity. All the students and even the exiles are calling for peaceful, non-violent resistance to the regime. So I think if that is when the know-how of the world in the past 10 years, we have witnessed a lot of transition to democracy, be it in the communist regimes or in Latin America. And that is when the know-how and the assistance, both moral, ideological, and technical in terms of law and juridical, would be extremely useful to the Iranian opposition.
Ladan, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Ladan Buraman, director of the Buraman Foundation for the Promotion of Human Rights and Democracy in Iran. Earlier in the hour, we talked with Zia Atabai. He is founder of National Iranian Television, broadcasting from California into Iran once he gets his signals unscrambled, and he's still working on that. Jim Muir was also with us. He's a BBC correspondent based in Tehran. A thanks today to Simone Steverson and Giselle Poss at NPR for their assistance with the program. And our program's produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Elaine Grant, Kelly Jones, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Lindsay Miller, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.